Fine, all right.
Well, I took this civilian pilot training program and then came back to New York City and got my job for $20 a week. And then I got a telegram and they wanted me to come down and take an advanced course. And if that telegram had come 2 days earlier before I got that job for $20 a month, I would have taken it. And if I'd taken it, I would have undoubtedly been a pilot in the war, because the five people that did, two or three of them ended up as brigadier generals. One was killed, one ended up as instructor. So, and I like flying, and I probably would have accepted that, but I didn't. As a result, I went on and got a master's degree. My draft board was in the middle of Harlem because my mother lived on Morningside Heights. And the draft board in the middle of Harlem was oversubscribed with people. And they wrote me a letter while I was in Nebraska and said, "We think that we have been deferring you all this time so that you could get a job and do something for the war effort." And they suggested that I go ahead and get a job and do something for the war effort. So I applied for jobs at several of the pharmaceutical houses, mm-hmm. and accepted one at Merck because my wife wanted to go to the New York School of Social Work, getting a master's degree while I worked during the war.
Now, was she a chemist or?
No, she's a social worker.
Okay.
And so she got her master's degree at Columbia while we lived in New York City, and I commuted to Rahway, New Jersey, which was a sort of a mess. But
now, the $20 a week job, that's the one in...
I've jumped over the whole Nebraska period now.
Okay, that was before Nebraska.
Yes.
The
draft and the Army and all that stuff is how the thing got messed up. Anyway, the sequence of events is I took the civilian pilot training program, got to be a pilot,
right.
got my bachelor's degree at Rollins, went to Nebraska, got a master's degree, came back to New York in 1942, summer, mm-hmm. left Nebraska in a windstorm, temperature 95 degrees, by Greyhound bus, never forget that day. Arrived in New York, went to work at Merck, and I worked at Merck for 3 years then during the war. Worked for Max Tischler.
Yeah, that was. And you also had some
worked
dealings
on,
with John Sheehan.
And John Sheehan was in the next lab.
I see.
Merck had quite a distinguished group of scientists at that time, and large numbers of them left. Merck is an institution that has large numbers of alumni.
Who else was there at the time?
Oh, Karastesi, for example, and Harris, and Mazingo, and those are the names that...
those were people who were there?
Kurt Laudenberg.
During the war.
It was Bittenbender, Bolhoeffer, Jack Little. Those are some of the names that come to mind. There's large numbers of others, but I can't bring them to mind without spending some time.
That's fine.
There was a steroid chemist, Bander or something or other. Can't remember. He was making cortisone, as I recall. Of course, John Sheehan, working on vitamin A, if I remember correctly,
mm-hmm.
or penicillin. And of course, Carl Fokers was there. I worked on the penicillin. My first file was isolation of penicillin and purification.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the time when, of course, we were recovering penicillin from the urine of patients and to recycle it.
I see, it was really hard.
Because it was very valuable.
Uh-huh.
And so I got a lot of training in isolation chemistry and chromatography, which 1942 was on alumina, was just starting to be fairly common. I had run some chromatograph columns at Nebraska, but quite a bit more primitive and a much smaller scale. Well, then I worked on the riboflavin process, and I worked on the papaverine process. And then I worked on the isolation and purification of streptomycin. Those are the things that I worked on while I was there. I did quite a bit of development work. I did some basic research. I did even pilot plant work. I ran a 400-pound batch of ribose into ribotolamine and several hundred pounds of rainy nickel, and with about 8 hydrogen tanks pouring hydrogen into a great big kettle. Everything happening at once, and the reaction had to be over in 4 minutes, or you lost about $70,000 to $80,000 worth of stuff. I remember running that out in the open, essentially in an open shed.
So you got an enormous amount of training.
So I got a lot of training.
Yeah. And who was your advisor? Was Tischler?
Well, Tischler was my boss's boss, and I had a series of about 3 bosses.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Laudenberg was one, and Bolhoffer, gosh, I can't remember the fellow's name. He's now an executive someplace.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to him a couple of years ago. I had 2-3 bosses, but Max took a particular interest in me and used to come around and see me directly, so I always felt that I worked for him because he was the continuity. Also, I talked to him about, well, the moment BJ Day came along, I applied to get into Harvard as quickly as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, I moved to Harvard, I think, 3 months after BJ Day, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
On a teaching assistantship.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got a National Research Council fellowship a few months later.
They were available for graduate students at that time. I know the postdocs very often had them, but there were
some undergraduate.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to try to get out of my TA-ship, and we entered into a compromise arrangement whereby I worked for nothing for one half of a semester in return for being released for the other half.
I see. Who was it that you wheeled a deal with during that?
It was some old fellow that was an inorganic chemist that was chairman of the department at the time. I can't remember his name, my gosh.
Was Lamb gone by that time?
No, Lamb was there, but he was editor, and he was not chairman. There was an inorganic chemist of some sort.
Oh.
I'd recognize his
Jones?
Name. No, I remember Jones. He was short and peppery, and a very nice, decent person.
Yeah, I'll have to look back in my records and see.
But I think you could identify him from what I've said. He was chairman in 45. He was chairman in 45. Well, I get to Harvard, and who's there but George Hammond and Ted Lewis. And they were sort of left over from an earlier period.
Yeah, right. They had been working with Bartlett during the war and some of those...
That's right. And of course, Louis was there, and Mary was very much there, possibly too much. And of course...
You called upon to get the cookies, too. That's what Tom Jacobs was telling me. He refused to get the cookies for the tea.
Well, there were quite a large number of things that I was called upon to do, which I never did, and got into Mary's ill graces, as a matter of fact, as a result. Actually, Max Tischler probably, as much as anybody, was responsible for my going to Harvard.
Yes, I wondered whether he had to.
And he had encouraged me to do this, and he'd also encouraged me to work with Fieser, which...
Surprised.
Now, actually... it didn't take me very long to realize that, or to think, I don't think I realized, I just thought, that I probably had made a bad mistake. But looking back on it, I think it was the best thing I could ever have done.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, on Max Tischler's advice, I went to work for Pfizer. When I got to Harvard, I found that Pfizer really was a pre-war rather than a post-war chemist in his thinking, and that there were much better people. And I had already committed to Pfizer by the time I'd gone there.
Or you had written him before?
I had written to him before and had, in effect, signed up.
Mm-hmm. Who was, Bartlett was there?
Bartlett was there and Woodward was there, and of course both of them were relatively young men then.
Yes.
And I envied the people that worked for them, and I wondered why I hadn't been smarter in working for them myself. But in looking back on it, my analysis is that I had the best of all worlds. I had the independence that went with working with somebody that didn't know what I was doing and didn't care very much, and the ability to learn from the best that were around, and on the kinds of grounds and occasion that I made rather than on some formal relationship. Now,
well, you were probably mature enough by, as a result of everything else that had happened to you, to do that kind of thing.
Yes, I was only 2 years younger than Woodward, and I didn't look upon him as any different than someone my age.
Right.
Although I admired him as a person, I thought, here's another interesting person. And Paul was maybe 8-10 years older than me, I guess. I don't know just exactly, but
he must have been born.
I'm 61 now, and he's about 71, is he?
He was born in 1910 or something like that.
No, he's 9 years.
1908. Something
different.
1908 to 1910, I can't remember
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, so he's about 10 years different age than me. And, of course, I looked up to him more as a person a generation removed from me. But I took a course from him. And George Hammond was the TA that corrected my paper. And that course was a revelation.
This was now the...
This was Chem 5, if I
okay.
remember correctly.
Yeah, that's the advanced organic course.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether that was the physical organic course or the advanced organic course.
And as I recall, I got an A in it and enjoyed it thoroughly. Really enjoyed it. Got a big kick out of it. And then I started taking CUMS. They just invented CUMS. The first few CUMS, they announced what they're going to be on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember, for example, there's going to be on the use of isotopes in organic chemistry. I looked up every paper that was published on isotopes in organic chemistry at that time. And as a result, I learned a whole lot of stuff that was very interesting. But, of course, they corrected that after about four CUMS. Because people are spending all their time studying for these CUMS and weren't doing any research, and the staff thought this is not so great, yeah. So they changed it and left them unannounced.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember how many. I think we had to pass 7, and I think I passed 7 out of 8, if I remember correctly, or 5 out of 6. I forget. It was one of the two. And as I recall, the one I flunked was on the history of organic chemistry, and it was given by Louis Pfizer, and I misspelled so many names. In fact, there's a story. Who's the famous Emil Fischer? I spelled Emil Fischer A-M-Y-L. And when I came to Emil Fischer, When Pfizer came to this, there was a great big red mark in the papers, and there was a great big arrow to this, and they said, I can't stand this any longer, and there are no red marks after that, so I knew that it hadn't been corrected past that point, and I just flunked.
Seems to me that was perfectly chemical, and that you should have been willing to overlook.
I've never been able to spell proper names. I can spell reasonably well non-capitalized names, but I can't handle proper names for some peculiar historical reason. Well, then I got through that. I took the 4 tests that I had to take when I first arrived. I had been preparing for those tests by working problems in all sorts of books. Passed them all. So I had no courses to make up. And I started doing research.
You took the advanced organic. Did you take the thermal course, for example, or?
I took the thermodynamics course. Mm-hmm. KISTE was not there when I first came. Mm-hmm. That was taught by a fellow that went to Columbia after Harvard. Now, what's his name? A very nice person, good teacher. I may bring his name to mind as okay. time goes on.
Right.
Got a B in it, I think, and had some statistical mechanics and quantum mechanics in it. I think it was a year course, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Quebel and I studied together.
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, we both got B's. And I had to stretch on that course. I had to really work hard. It's one of the few things that I didn't have the proper mathematical background at Rollins, and I had to go back and learn a whole bunch of mathematics, which I did. And I think that was probably the only B I got at Harvard. But then I didn't have to take any courses on anything. I didn't go to Bartlett seminars, but I went to Woodward seminars. Mm-hmm. And they were held reasonably frequently then. They used to be 4 or 5 hours long.
And I went. And it was still that way about 10 years later. I was there then.
Yeah, and I listened to all of Woodward's courses.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to know him quite well personally. In fact, I'd done some work on the structure of a compound on the side and had it almost fully elucidated and tried it out on him. And he helped me with some suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
And we arrived at the final structure. And then I confirmed it later. And a natural product. And I earned his respect in the process of doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we weren't all that different in age. Also, I went skiing with him, probably the only time he ever went skiing. And it was a disaster. I mean, he almost really got hurt. I was concerned about him.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't skied since I was a kid, and was a reasonably good skier, not super, but pretty good.
You were pretty athletic, I
suppose. Yeah.
And he was never...
he was the antithesis of an athlete. And in fact, he always had a set of jokes about people engaged in athletics
mm-hmm.
that always degraded the operation.
Well,
so I got a good look at his mind, mm-hmm. of course, in these seminars, and then he taught a whole course on morphine.
Mm-hmm.
And Woodward's courses were a lot about a little, to summarize, and also he would show up for class only when he felt like it. Nobody would quite know beforehand whether he's going to show up or not.
That's interesting, because I have a feeling maybe he, earlier on, he was more conscientious than he was later, but sometimes the course would never meet at all. This was
well, I think
in the late 50s.
I think he probably met three-quarters of the time at the beginning and maybe half in the middle period and none at the end.
I see.
Type operation.
Mm-hmm.
As he got to be more famous, there was more slippage.
Yeah. Yeah,
I remember when he was promoted to associate professor. I remember congratulating him on getting tenure on the
mm-hmm.
Coming in the door at Converse.
Mm-hmm.
And I shared a lab with Martin Ettlinger, who you may have heard of or may not have.
Sorry.
He's now at Martin Ettlinger.
Ettlinger.
Ettlinger. E-T-L-I-N-G-E-R. Martin Ettlinger. Martin was a Texan, and after he got his PhD, he came out to Caltech for a year, and then he went to Rice, and he was on the staff at Rice for a while, and then he went from Rice to Copenhagen. He's teaching in Copenhagen. I saw him last year.
Mm-hmm.
He was a prodigy. Both his father and mother were mathematicians, and
mm-hmm.
he had a photographic memory, and was a real intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
We all used to play touch football, Harry Wasserman and Jack Roberts and George Hammond out in the back of Converse until we broke a window, and then somebody got mad and decreed we couldn't play touch football out there anymore.
There's always a little...
I got to know Jack quite well. Mm-hmm. Got to know George. We talked about the possibility of writing a textbook sometime together. While we were...
At least two of you did.
The two of you did. Two of us did.
And the third went off on his own.
Yes, except that later on, we almost got Jack to join us.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if we'd given him more time, I think he would have.
Yeah.
But we put a deadline on him, and he couldn't fill it. And so
I see.
He said that he couldn't fill it.
Mm-hmm.
But if he gives more time, he'd join us. But we'd put in a lot of time already, and I didn't want to delay it. So we went ahead. Well, then what happened? I finished Harvard in about 18 months. I came in September, got all my courses out of the way, took the tests, passed all the tests, got my French and German out of the way, and those were comical. They were fictional type tests.
You'd get out of the basement, somebody would hand you an article, if you could read that.
Well, you had to sit down at a table and do a translating job and hand it in, and somebody glanced at it, and that was it.
What's his name? The fellow who had the name, that one of the buildings was named after, he would give you the exam.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
And it didn't come to anything.
If you were lucky, you got a French, the French would be a experimental section, and you could... Yeah,
interpolate it pretty much.
That's how I managed to get past my French exam.
And those were non exams.
So. Right.
And I knew how to do research already, and I got a problem working on naphthoquinones, two acyl naphthoquinones. And so I became the world authority on two acyl naphthoquinones, two acyl 3-hydroxy naphthoquinones. And I made something like 75 compounds, new compounds, for testing as antimalarials. And I wrote, after I'd been there about a year, I thought, gee, I really should write a report on this. So I wrote a report, and I never saw feasors, essentially, after the first time I came in to get a problem.
Oh, really?
And I saw a lot of Mary, but I never saw Louis. Louis was in doing lab work. And... after about a year, I thought, gee, maybe Louis ought to know what I was doing, so I wrote a report for him. And he gave it to Mary to read, and Mary came in, and she was at that time doing a lot of writing and learning how to write. And she was giving a course in creative scientific writing, which we all had to take.
Really?
And which was good for me, although I didn't like it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote this report, and she marked it up and gave it back to me. And Louis never saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no comments on the science of it. It all had to do with English and whatnot. And it was a good job that Mary did. And mm-hmm. It was good for me. Well, I had some trouble with the analyst. Those are the days when you had to pay your own lab bills for the most part, or a good portion of them. And Harold Port and Bill Sager were there, and they were in the glass blowing business. And I remember I ordered $450 worth of glassware, micro ground glass equipment that I designed for my research and paid for it myself. And I had an $800 storeroom bill that I had to pay for at the end when I left. I remember that.
After only 18 months, that's absolutely...
Well, some of the tab had been picked up by my fellowship, but I had overrun it mm-hmm. by that much.
I see.
So forth. And also, I remember being very disgusted. Somebody called me up one Christmas vacation and asked me what I was working, and I proudly said, yes, of course. And then they were going to charge me for renting on the lab, personally. And I raised a big fuss about it, and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But things were a little different then. Well, it became pretty clear that Louis wasn't going to get to know me or get to know my abilities except through merit. And it's also very visible that this is turning into quite a biography. It was also very visible that Mary didn't like me very much because I wouldn't do things to accommodate her.
Mm-hmm.
And
what kinds of things would she call me to
order compounds or to do this chore, that chore?
Mm-hmm.
And I did the first few times, but then as time went on, I thought it improper that I'd be spending my time this way, so I refused to.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept on working and accumulating results, and then the question came up as to just when was I finished. So I went to the library to look over thesis. I looked at Louis' thesis, which is a very heavy, big.
Mm-hmm.
He did a very substantial thesis for.
He worked with Conan.
Yeah. And he did a very nice one. Mm-hmm. But I figured I had a master's degree, so if I could take my master's thesis, my PhD thesis, put them together, I'd get something somewhere near his.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided after I'd been there about 16 months that I could finish in 18 months. And so I wrote the whole thing up and gave it to Louis as a thesis. In the meantime, there was this analyst, and I had some problems with the analyst in the sense that I had given her a compound with boron and fluorine in it, not knowing that I had a chelated compound.
Mm-hmm.
I had to use BF3, and of course she had an ash and it fouled up her furnace. And then it ruined a whole bunch of subsequent analyses.
Mm-hmm.
And so this resulted in my not being able to use her.
Mm-hmm.
And I came down to the wire. I had something like 40 analyses that needed to be done. So I went to the storeroom and signed out a whole bunch of antiquated combustion equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And did 15 milligram analyses on 40 compounds in something like 10 days. Set it up, standardized it, went through the whole bit. And Fieser saw all this equipment. He was walking by the door and he looked in and he saw all this equipment. He said, "What in the world are you doing?" So I told him what I was doing. He admired me more for doing that than he did anything else because he understood it.
Mm-hmm.
You may recall that he did analytical work himself back in the days when they were determining the atomic weight of carbon. He combusted very large samples. That's one of the first things he did.
I didn't know that.
This was back in the days when the atomic weight of carbon wasn't known. And
mm-hmm.
He polished that. The atomic weight of carbon got
mm-hmm.
a much more accurate value by carbon-hydrogen
mm-hmm.
combustion analysis. So he admired this. So I wanted to apply for fellowship for the next year. And so I wrote this all up and gave it to Louis. And he said, "What's this?" I said, "It's my thesis, my PhD thesis." He says, "What's in it?" And I said, "Well, there's what's in that report plus what I've done in the meantime."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he was very surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gave it to Mary again. And Mary went over it and said, "Well, it looks like a pretty good thesis." And in the meantime, I'd gotten to know Jack Roberts really quite well.
Yeah.
And he offered me a postdoc job with him. And and I was going to start in April of my second year, but Louis said, "Well, now that you've done your thesis, there's several other things we'd like to have you do."
I wasn't going to let a good man go that easily.
So I got out in June, but I'd got my thesis. I submitted my thesis in April.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a few more compounds of his design. These others had been of my designs.
That has to be one of the fastest PhDs.
So I got out of there pretty fast, and I had I was raised in the Depression, and I figured that there were going to be all sorts of people knocking at the academic doors.
That was my next question.
There was going to be a limited number of of jobs, and
mm-hmm.
I wanted to be out early.
Yeah.
And so I got out at the same. I got out that June. I got my PhD
mm-hmm.
in June with George Hammond and Ted Lewis,
mm-hmm.
and got a American Chemical Society fellowship that paid me $1,000 a year to come to an institution where I'd be a half-time teacher and half-time my own investigator. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to come out west because I hadn't been in that part of the country, so I asked Jack, what's the best organic chemistry place? This is Jack Roberts.
Yes.
What's the best organic chemistry place in the West Coast? And he said, UCLA. And I said, is it near the ocean? He said, yes. I said, fine, that's where I'll go. So I applied to UCLA. Would they give me a part-time teaching job? $1,500. No, $2,500. $1,000. $1,000. The ACS gave me $2,500, and the institution had given me $1,000. So I got $3,500, mm-hmm. which is enough to live on.
Yeah.
But I went down to get some money to go cross country with. I went down to work and postdoc with Jack, and he had, in the meantime, gotten a teaching job at
MIT.
Right. And so he hired me, and so I went down and worked for him for 3 months, from June to August, or maybe it was May, June.
He's given me a list of his postdocs.
I think it was May, June, and July.
And you're listed there for the
I left in August, period, I think,
right.
and then came out here. But in the meantime,